listeners. Welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next 30 minutes. And this week's episode is entitled Politics on the Plane. Spelled P-L-A-I-N, not P-L-A-N-E. We're not talking about the politics of flying in an airplane. No, we're talking about that. We're looking at films where there's an intersection between political ideas, political themes, or just generally the political and the rural. So the countryside living off the land. Basically, we're taking a pretty broad view of what we mean by the plane. We almost called this week's episode Politics on the Prairie, even. Just anywhere that's kind of like a rural area, countryside area that isn't in a metropolitan or city area. And it's a pretty big week, and we've picked some pretty big films. So I think it's worth just getting straight stuck into it. To begin with, the first film we're going to talk about is Sweet Home Alabama, directed by Andy Tennant from 2002. We're then going to move on to a new film that comes out in Australian cinemas on the 27th of July. That's Alcaraz, directed by Carla Simón and Sonia Castelo. That's a Catalonian film or Spanish film. Not sure how to say that in the respectful way, but I think you get what I mean there. And then we're finishing off with Mel Brooks's classic comedy Blazing Saddles from 1974. But let's kick things off now with Sweet Home Alabama. Now, if you don't know much about this one, it's the one starring Reese Witherspoon from 2002, and she plays this fashion designer who's based in New York at the beginning of the film, but she has to go back to her rural Alabama hometown to get a divorce from her ex-husband, and that's because she wants to marry her new boyfriend, played by the forever charming Patrick Dempsey. So we can't ignore the fact that the basic premise or structure of this film it orbits around this archetypal love triangle, very a la Pride and Prejudice, Casablanca, Twilight, where we have this perennial feminine dilemma where she's weighing up two guys. Usually there's one who is this sort of traditionally rugged, salt-of-the-earth, pragmatic, hunky lumberjack ideal, and it can wank him up against the suave, sophisticated, intelligent, very handsome, somewhat sensitive ideal. So we've got the Josh Lucas is the rugged boy, and then we've got the Patrick Dempsey who's the intelligent, sophisticated one. And in this film, you know, we do have to ask our question, you know, who's she going to choose? Well, we always have our little favourites, our own. And I guess, we like starting off these shows with a popular film and asking the question, you know, what is it about the mainstream that makes us drawn towards these stories and particularly the endings of these stories? It's a fairly old film now. I don't mind giving away the ending here. But why do we align with Reese Witherspoon's choice in the end? Well, she does end up with Josh Lucas, the rugged guy, the original, and I think it's important to say that he's the first one, like he's the first, her first love, he's the one that introduces her to love, you know, he from him comes love, I suppose, in her life in a way. There's this theme of generating love, a generation coming from him, and I think the reason why that is, well, I guess in this specific case, it's really about her going back to her roots, right? He's the first man, but he's also, because he's from the countryside, because he's from like the agrarian, the organic, the naturalistic side of her life, she's kind of literally going back to her beginnings in a way, in the same way that human beings' beginnings were in the earth, in the organic. So when we talk about her going back to her roots, we sort of have to see this film as is not just a simple love story, her picking a man, but she's picking the idea of going back to the organic, going back to the natural. And that's what we kind of identify with her, whether we're a man, woman, heterosexual, homosexual. I think human beings have this kind of innate, we're innately drawn to the rugged, to the organic, to the sort of uncivilized, to the somewhat chaotic in a way. And the film really communicates that well in how it romanticizes the rural. And I think when you watch a film like this, it kind of has, you know, interesting, it's called Sweet Home Alabama, which is a reference to the Lynyrd Skynyrd song. But this film in its entirety kind of has the same appeal as listening to like sentimental country music. I mean, that kind of guilty pleasure you might have when you just put on some Keith Urban or something like that, where you're driving down the highway and just like sort of just fit into that that aesthetic. I think this film has that quality to it because there's something like innately intoxicating about that, like about rural culture, like this sense of community or this homestyleness. You know, the people talk about like things like southern hospitality, but also like on a natural level, like fresh air, connecting with nature, but also just like living a simple life. You know, going out into the farm, harvesting food, eating. It's kind of like we go right back to our basics. It's a very cleansing thing to do. But the film doesn't just romanticize the rural. It equally is kind of anti-society, anti-civilization, or at least anti-too much society. It's kind of anti-extremism of society in a way, or civilization, because it's not just that the Patrick Dempsey character is just a city boy, but he's also a politician, and more importantly, his mother, who is this kind of devouring, controlling mother, and those are really important words, particularly the word controlling. She's the mayor of New York City, which has a great deal of poetic value to it. You know, she's the leading politician in the most metropolitan. You know, when you think of a big city, New York is like the stereotypical, like the archetypal, like biggest, big city with the big skyscrapers. Not even a stereotypical city, like that's, it's a real place. Like it's, it does look like it does looks in the pictures kind of thing. So by rejecting her, Reese Witherspoon is kind of rejecting that family. She's kind of rejecting being fully, like fully committed to the societal, to the civilized in an extreme sense. And when we think about what is a politician, you know, a politician is someone who uses their head to come up with a rigid, articulable set of rules on how the world and how people should be governed, which is the complete opposite to like a farmer who uses their hands to get dirty into the earth and feel around and plant things. And there's less of rhyme or reason to it. You're not using words. There's a science to it to a degree, but you're letting nature take its course, right? You're just sort of, you're not coming up with new rules. You're abiding by the laws of nature, by the laws of Mother Earth herself. And I think the film kind of has this undertone of you can't plan or design a life through artificial architecture alone. And so I think, like, in trying to summarize the theme to the film, I guess it kind of says that the result of romanticizing the rural and putting down the political, that equation sort of leads us to this place of, there is this sort of inevitability that we find the countryside instinctively appealing, charming, homely, but at the very least valuable. We can't dispose of it. It's something that we innately are drawn to, something that we can even be explored, that in the way that we indulge it can be exploited with things like, you know, a Keith Urban style country music and a film like this. And I don't mean to say, you know, you might be listening to this and be like, no, I hate camping, I hate going outside, I hate mosquitoes and bugs. But we all like the idea of, just on a basic level, you know, clean air, fresh food, green land, unsmoggy skies, nature, a thriving environment. You might be like a climate denier, but you still like the idea of a thriving woodland environment where animals can flourish. Like, no one likes seeing beached whales and baby seals getting clubbed to death. Like, maybe the most universal truths as human beings like a thriving natural realm. And interestingly, I think it's, you know, a bit of a side note, but the Reese Witherspoon's character is a fashion designer, which I think is kind of like the nexus of both of these worlds that she's tossing up. So, like, you know, she's a designer, so she definitely, you know, like, understands the idea of, like, using the brain, using the rational, using the mind to come up with something, to design something new in this kind of godly sense. But on the other hand, she uses fabric. So it's almost like she manipulates earthly resources through human ingenuity to make something more useful. And so I think the film, you could say, it's about not forgetting our roots as people, going back to the thing that we innately will always be anchored by, which is, you know, we are natural organisms. But despite being instinctively drawn to that, you know, even if you are thriving in New York City with all your fabulous friends, we are drawn to the city, but sometimes those city folk who are thriving, you know, in Manhattan kind of thing, they don't always get back to nature. And they don't remember where they came from. And sort of what happens when we forget to do that? What happens when we forget the people out there, right? Well, before we proceed to our next film, just remind you are listening to 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Please stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX. And also consider jumping onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show or any of 2XX's wonderful shows. But moving on now to Alcaraz, directed by Carla Simone and Sonia Castello, which is coming out in Australian cinemas on the 27th of July. Well, speaking of planes, right, well, where is the rain that falls mainly on the plane? It's Spain. And so this film is, we're talking about this film because it's a film about a family of fruit farmers, I think specifically plum farmers, as they try and kind of keep their heads above water, so to speak, in dealing with the everyday grievances of contemporary, specifically because like contemporary rural life, specifically, I suppose, in Catalonia or Spain. Please forgive me. I'm just going to go with Catalonia from now. Interestingly, this one's not set in America, and we've talked to Senegal about Alabama, and you know, there's a uniqueness to the American rural tradition, and you might be thinking, well, this is a bit of a stretch to now talk about Catalonia, but it's going to become very important in a second why it's important that we actually talk about different countries and how they deal with rural life, maybe very similarly or differently, but just park that for a second. There's two kind of aspects of this film I want to really focus on, which is the first part is how it echoes Sweet Home Alabama in a way, and it talks about how farm life is something that should be seen as sacred and valuable and dignified and is something that we're drawn to. But it also, it shows that it's not simply a walk in the park, right? And I think this interesting dynamic or tension between these two ideas is probably best symbolized in this motif of fruit and fruit farming. So if we think about the symbolism of fruit, you know, fruit has a very numinous quality to it. And I don't think this film would have worked nearly as well if they were like pig farmers or something like that. And we see a lot of, you know, fruit picking, fruit eating, preparing meals, big plates of fruit, things like that. It makes, you know, it's very juicy and enticing. It makes me hungry just thinking about this, you know, the sliced up plums that they have in a lot of these scenes. And it's set in Spain, so you've got the beautiful sunlight coming through the glass and everything like that. But, you know, fruit has this, you know, biblical quality. You know, the fruit is that thing that is what Adam and Eve were tempted by. It's kind of got this idea of, you know, the original sin is connected to fruit. It's this sweet thing that we can't resist. So it dangles there and we want a piece of it. But it's not all that great, right? Fruit can be a bit naughty or a bit indulgent having too much, you know, if we have too many slices of dried mango, we can start to put the kegs on a little bit. So fruit is sort of historically this symbol of, you know, it takes hard work in order to enjoy the sweets and the somewhat indulgent prize that you're rewarded from working hard. You know, we have this phrase, the fruits of your labor. Fruit doesn't just drop out of the air willy-nilly. You've got to work for it and that sort of thing. And I think this film really plays around with this idea. You know, as a society, when and how should we acquire the fruits of our labor? And the word labor there is also very important because this is definitely a film that questions the idea of hard work always leading to us being able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. So does spending a lot of time planting seeds always bear fruit? Because this family certainly has their trials and tribulations. There's, I think just on a basic level, like you can't help but think we'll feel sorry for the kids a little bit. And there's all these scenes. Interestingly, we are comparing this to Sweet Home Alabama. They both have interesting dance scenes. We have characters getting up on a stage to perform for a broader audience kind of thing. And in Sweet Home Alabama, it's kind of like, you know, everyone doesn't get along. Whereas in this film, it's kind of like this element of embarrassment. There's an element of not wanting to stick out, feeling that we're being a bit cringeworthy, that we're pushing an agenda that we're not really allowed to be pushing. You know, am I allowed to be a dancer and a farmer? Is that something that's sort of embarrassing or that sort of thing? And you can tell, you know, the kids are like listening to modern music and you can kind of feel like they feel a little bit disjunct and they don't really fit into the farming world. But then sort of building on that, there's questions around health and you know, are there available amenities for the people that live out on the farm? But the big one is really the economic hardship that they face. So they're doing a really important job and they're not seeing like the literal fruits of their labor, because they are, I guess they're seeing those, but they're not getting the financial remuneration that they need to keep going in and to provide a service that, you know, humanity requires. So, you know, we are in this world where it's not just all fun and games out there, yet we still feel as though, and I think the film does a really good job, of, despite all those hardships, we still feel as though that rural life is worth protecting, because we have a visceral reaction whenever the trees get cut down or when the fruit gets squashed or wasted, which is used very cleverly in the film, you know, moments where a basket of fruit gets dropped and the plums get squashed under a car tire or something like that. We have a natural visceral reaction to that when we go, no, we don't want to see spoil. We don't want to see ruined fruit. We don't want to see wasteful fruit. But we also don't want to see the culture itself, rural culture, rural life being wasted. So all of those plums are symbols for the greater community at large, these rural communities who are being squashed by big business. So there's very clearly this political bent to the film. And, if you talk about a film like Sweet Home Alabama, which has the metropolitan girl coming back down and having a look at everything, this is a film where we have a faceless society. So this is kind of like the story of, what happens when the city girl, the silly city boy, doesn't come down and get their hands dirty. This is what happens when the city is completely ignorant of the country. And he's really telling a broader story about what happens in politics, or what's kind of happening in politics right now, where we have a large strata of people who are feel forgotten, who are, indescribably crucial to the economy and to the rest of us, but are so often forgotten and belittled. And I think one of the strengths of this film is that it reminds us that this is something that, as I'm speaking, you might be thinking about, people in America who voted for Donald Trump or something like that. But this is a film that reminds us that this is happening on both sides of politics. Like, I think the usual story these days is the people living in, Oklahoma or Kansas or something are feeling forgotten by people living in Los Angeles in New York, and that's why Trump won in 2016. This is a film which is like, well, these are farmers who are like pro-unions. These are very like left-wing farmers. And I think the film has quite a left-wing bent to it. And they're still being forgotten as well. And their plight is still worthy of consideration. So if you are someone that's like ignorant perhaps of farmers or rural people because you assume they're all sort of racist hicks or something like that, you have to remember that's a very pejorative, that's too general and prejudiced a way to look at the world, and that there are people that are fighting for workers' rights that live out in the farm. There are, left-wing farmers, obviously. And ultimately, this is really a question around economics and labor, and who is calling the shots, who's writing the narrative. But on that, maybe we should move on to our next film, because we're in this sort of interesting place now where we've talked about how the rural world is kind of like an idyllic section of the world that's inherently intoxicating. But we also, despite how intoxicating it is, we too often ignore it. And we do need to figure out why we do this and whether there's a way that we can reconcile this. And to hopefully answer those questions, let's move into our third and final film for this week. And this is Blazing Saddles by Mel Brooks. And if you haven't seen this one, it stars Cleavon Little, who plays this character, Bart, and he's chosen to be a sort of stopgap sheriff in the town of Rock Ridge. And what's important to note that is that Bart is played by Cleavon Little. He is an African-American, and he's appointed by this white, hoity-toity, civilized bad guy, stereotypical bad guy, so he can get some train track figured out. Cleavon Little is simply just put there in that role, just so this guy, he's a puppet, essentially. And he's helped along, his friend is Jim, played by Gene Wilder, famously in this film. And he meets him in the jail cell, and they sort of come up with a plan to fix this, the fix up Rock Ridge and make sure that bad things don't happen. We don't really need to go too much in the plot. There's sort of two levels I think you can view this film, and I think it's a very perceptive film that is still resonates today. People might consider this film just to be a silly 1970s bonehead comedy, but I think there's so much to it. The obvious level to look at this film is that it's clearly a subversion of the idealized American West. So if you think about like a classic John Wayne film or something, throughout much of America's cinematic history for many decades up until this point and further, like we still have Western films, cowboys were glorified, and this is something we know that it was, there was undertones of white supremacy and racism, I suppose you could say. And this kind of maybe answers our first question that we just asked a second ago. It's like, why is it that we often forget the rural people? Well, it might be because there are some rural people out there that are a bit rough as guts and have some opinions that are a little bit jarring for us that live in this, us city folk. And we have to come to terms with the fact that we often do sanitize, people who live in rural areas when we look at it on the Hollywood screen. And I think that's both for, maybe the left and the right. But the point is that we too often sanitize rural life. So if you take Sweet Home Alabama for example, you know, that's a real Hollywooded up version of the South, where they're very sort of gay friendly and all the men are very handsome and charming and everyone's having a good time. Whereas, you know, if you go out to a rural town in America, there's all sorts of mischief going on. And I think you could say a similar thing about Alcatraz as well, where you have this sort of like rural, like kind of progressive left-wing take on farm life. But of course, that's certainly not all farmers. There are plenty of farmers who aren't pro-union. There are plenty of farmers who are pro-gun and get off my land and I hate the government and I hate collective action. So we can't simply say that all farmers are like either of the ones that we see in both of those movies. And in Blazing Saddles, it's not, you know, for example, you know, they talk about how the farmers are, you know, very obviously very racist, and that's used as a joke to a degree. But I think it's really important that that's, you know, that they are depicted as quite racist, because that's kind of the truth of the Old West, and there's plenty of racist farmers in the world today still. So that's kind of like the obvious way that it subverts that ideal rural life thing. But I think, I mean, my mere words don't really get to it. I think there's a quote from the film that I think perfectly sums up this tension of the sanitized ideal rural life. And I almost want to just say the quote and move on, because there's so much to it, and I don't really want to unpack it too much, but I think we should try a little bit. And we should say as well that when you watch this scene, or particularly if you watch this scene in isolation, like on YouTube or something like that, outside of the film, it has this very, like, almost like a very dramatic realness to it, as if, like, it doesn't fit. Like Gene Wilder's actually trying to say something more than just a joke. But anyway, here's the quote that I think very perfectly depicts what I'm trying to say, which is Gene Wilder's got Bart under his arm, and he's trying to explain to him how they can fix this problem, how he can get the townspeople on his side. And because the townspeople haven't accepted him to begin with, and he's trying to solve these problems, and he puts his arm around his shoulder and he says, "You've got to remember that these are simple farmers. These are people of the land, the common clay of the New West. You know, morons." And I think what's so perfect about that quote, I think just in a very brash and crude terms, is that it's equally perceptive and ignorant. And therein lies our problem, that farmers can be simple folk who are people of the land, who look after the land, that do a very important job, that take care of us and take care of our food. And we shouldn't try and belittle them, because what they do is a very important job. And they might just be common people, but they're very, very important. But at the same time, there are morons that work on farms. That's something that we can't deny. And there are people that live on farms that have moronical views, if that's a word. I know it's from Tropicana, I'm not sure it's an actual word. But you get what I'm saying, that this is a weird tension that we have. We have to both value people that are themselves quite ignorant, but also it's important that we don't just simply ignore them. Our problem isn't simply solved just by, you know, abandoning them. So can we reconcile this tension? Well, let's circle back a second here. This is the second point I want to make about Blazing Saddles, that we need to go back to what I just said at the beginning of talking about this film, which is that it's a subversion of the idyllic West, right? But I don't think the film is only just about setting the record straight with respect to the American West. I think it's also about, or can also be about, the very idea of setting records straight, right? Which is an idea that we could kind of use for many topics on the show. It's got a bit of a Dr. Caligari or a Matrix or a Wag the Dog quality to it, where it could apply to kind of any topic that we do on this show. But I want to say that again. It's not simply just about setting the record straight about the American West, but it's also about the very idea of setting records straight. And I suppose in the Australian context, you could even say it's, you know, we have this concept of truth telling now, particularly with respect to conversations around rural life. And I don't want to say just rural life, but particularly around Indigenous affairs, which is very much interwoven to questions around rural life. And when we talk about the idea of setting records straight, it's a difficult thing to do. It's very hard. And I think what this film does is kind of trying to wake up its audience to say that everything you're looking at, everything you're watching, is simply coming through, you know, the filter of a film lens or through a camera lens of something, you know, a television screen or something. Everything that you're seeing is to some degree a facade. Anything that comes through the media is in and of itself somewhat influenced by media figures, right? So our concept of any culture or subculture, but in this case rural culture or subculture, be it an American, be it the American West or a rural Catalonian culture, is always subject to broader narratives that we're being fed. And eventually, the ugliness of reality will literally spill over into the sanitized, polished, rehearsed, and finely designed world that we talked about before when we talk about what the goal of political action is. That there's an ugly chaoticness, that there's an ugliness, a very chaotic sense to the rural or a chaotic element that exists and underpins the rural that will eventually spill over into society, spill over into civilization, if we don't deal with it, if we don't accept that it's much more than what we think it is through, the way that we sanitize it with film and media and television, that sort of thing. But look, let's sort of bring everything together a little bit. Let's try and make this a little bit more of a comprehensive summary of what we've talked about. So we talked about Sweet Home Alabama, we talked about the idea of the countryside being something that we are naturally drawn towards. There's a natural charm to the countryside and country culture, particularly in light of the political, particularly in comparison to the political, to the artificially designed, the rigid and the rational. But rural life is not all that it's cracked up to be, and it has its negative elements. But that doesn't mean we should just ignore it and even worse, abandon it, because it's crucial. It's something that we need, and even when it is destroyed, it makes us, even if we ignore it, even we still feel bad when it is destroyed. So maybe in ensuring that we maintain our supply chains and our sustenance, which is really at the core of what we're talking about. I think this is a really serious wig. We talk about these funny little symbols and things and stories, but really, I think this wig is very much about our own sustenance or our own survival in a way. I mean, I actually thought a little bit this week about, and we've already done that on the show a couple of weeks ago, but the film Interstellar. Like when I was thinking about mainstream films that have used farm life as a crucial thing, there's a reason why in that film, Matthew McConaughey's character is a farmer and he's all about saving humanity. Like, I think that's an important aspect of this week to talk about, that we're talking about keeping ourselves sustained. Perhaps the way to preserve the prairies and the plains is not just to buy whatever political plot we're being sold. For I feel it is plain to see that the players portraying the people of the plain are plainly planted by those farming their own political plums. Well, that's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema. Thank you so much for joining us here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX. So if you're not on our website already, jump on there to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show. We'd very much appreciate if you could do any of that, but we'd also appreciate if you could get in contact. You can email me at contact@jimmyberlusconi.com. Any feedback would be appreciated, any recommendations as well. But we'll see you next week. Thank you.